Sokala Duma Radio.
We are lucky to have Neil Collins, former RAN Daily Mail, Mirror Football, Daily Mail UK, Evening Standard Post, and self-proclaimed White Sangoma. You can follow him on Twitter. He never stops tweeting. Good friend of Sokala Duma. Neil, thanks for joining us. We're talking Champions League and the incredible rise of English football.
Yeah, no, I thought we were going to be speaking in Spanish, Clint. I was all ready to talk Spanish with you because I know you're a great Spaniard at heart. And I was already there. And I'm not the self-proclaimed White Sangoma. I was called that during Gordon Eggerson's reign. When we won 3-0 in Cameroon, everyone called me the White Sangoma because I predicted it.
Phenomenal.
And but I am definitely at top of my league in, what do you call it, Super Brew. And I'm no man. I get loads of them wrong, though. Jeez, I would have got all of them wrong this week. And it's just been a phenomenal week. I mean, when did you ever see a week like this in football?
I'm going to be honest with you, Neil. These are not the results I saw happening, possibly in Europa, because in that league, certainly the two English clubs are superpowers. But in the A-League, in the Champions League, I thought Ajax, the Ajax team, were the most exciting football side in that tournament this season. And I thought they'd have enough about them to finish the job. But let's start with Anfield and what happened with Barcelona, because that is the stuff of schoolboy comics, really, and what happened there. Did you, in your wildest dreams, see something like that happening, and how do you think it was achieved?
No, as an experienced England fan, I remember watching Barcelona-Sampdoria in the 90s at Wembley in a European Cup final, and Barcelona always come to England and do well. Man United will tell you about it. But I would say this, because they haven't won the league since 89, they've never won the Premier League, Liverpool, but because this year they're competing and they're right up there and they're starting to get back to what they used to be in the 80s.
Yes.
Anfield has become the fortress again, hasn't it? I mean, there was a moment before the second leg where everyone thought Liverpool are going to lose. They're 3-0 down. I thought Barcelona were quite lucky to get 3-0 up.
Yes.
At the Nou Camp. But they actually, for once, SuperSport got it right and just let the crowd sing on our television. And even the misses and the kids sitting listening to them singing You'll Never Walk mm-hmm. Alone were aware of the impenetrable and intimidating atmosphere that Anfield can produce. I used to go there when it was a standing stadium. The cop was frightening. If you had a southern accent like I've got, you didn't sound Scouse. You had to keep very quiet in case someone thought you supported someone else. It is an intimidating city. It's an intimidating atmosphere at Anfield when things are going well. And I think that's what Barcelona stumbled into partially. I think they had the 12th man, didn't they, with their fans. And then no Mo Salah, Divock Origi and Gini Wijnaldum. I mean, they aren't even like really household names. I mean, they're good players, but it's not your Mo Salah, it's not your Sadio Mane, was it, that deconstructed Barcelona? And I think that's where we see it, that the depth that the English clubs have now, with the enormous amounts of television money that go into the English clubs, they have debt much greater, I think, than even the big Spanish, German, Italian clubs. They have three or four players on the bench that would probably do well. Yes, you've got it, I guess. But I think, just like Mamelodi Sundowns in Sudáfrica, they have so much debt that you'll suddenly see a player come out and say, oh, I didn't know he was still there. And that's what really what Divock Origi has done in these last few weeks. And with those two goals and that sensational late winner. I mean, if you saw the Anfield commentators and the Anfield crowd when that last goal went in, it was like poetry. It was a fairy tale. Definitely, the White Sangoma did not predict anything like that.
In the first leg, I think there was a moment, and as you say, I thought Liverpool were very unlucky in that game, because certainly their performance didn't warrant the three goals. I think the last move of that game, there was a break from a corner which saw Messi and two others maraud down the field. Yes. And really was three on one with the keeper and fluffed their lines. And the parting shot from that was Messi lying on the ground, eyes clenched shut. It looking back at that, it was almost as if he knew 3-0 was not enough against a team like Liverpool.
Well, I think it was Messi that pulled the ball across. Dembele had, yes, and two of them were open. Dembele had an open goal, put it straight into Alisson's arms, and that could have been 4-0. I thought it should have been more like 1-2. Messi's fantastic free kick is just something you can't legislate for. So on the back of that, Messi then goes out and tells the fans, we're definitely going to win the European Cup, but yeah, we're going to the final, blah-de-blah. And then on top of that, you've got Jurgen Klopp behind the scenes and some of the players. Henderson said it afterwards. They were told by Klopp, look, we weren't that bad in the first leg. We can beat them. And they were technically, in terms of fitness, I think we've seen the conditioning of the English sides is something out of this world. I hope it's all legal. They go on and on, English clubs. They don't stop for 90 minutes. When we watch Premier League, it's in the closing stages that even teams like Leicester and Huddersfield and Fulham the other day against Everton, even though they're relegated, English players tend to play the full 90 minutes and they're aware that the last 10 minutes are crucial. And I see too much in South African football and in Spanish football when I watch La Liga, which I do as rarely as I can. I see sides that for the last 10 minutes, they're cruising and it's 1-1 and no one's going after it. I mean, obviously there's exceptions. Sure. But in the Premier League, what we've seen this year and last year, and what encouraged me to send you rude messages saying, just watch out for England in the next couple of years, is with all that money, all the facilities, the training grounds are like palaces. Arsenal's training ground, you have to take your shoes off, you have to, you've got heated clothing, you've got fantastic food, dietitians. They can now afford all those things that Orlando Pirates are trying to build at the moment with their 7 or 8 coaches. They're trying to address every aspect of the game, and that includes fitness, includes psychology, and it includes a never-say-die attitude that we saw from the English clubs this week in Europe. And I think money tells in the end, preparation tells, and the detail that English clubs put into their players from the age of 13, 14, when they get illegally signed up, they go off travelling. They're supposed to live within 90 miles of whichever club they play for. But I know players over the years that have got into these clubs, and their parents or a taxi driver or an Uber driver has to take them miles to go to Reading. From my old village in England, I had two lads going to Reading twice a week. Their schooling suffered terribly. They were 14. And yet they were going all the way to Reading to this fantastic big kind of hangar, AstroTurf pitches, masseurs, physios, you know, getting prepared for a life as a professional footballer. They don't all make it, but if they do make it, they are well prepared and they are hard, tougher, I think, able to play on a cold, wet, windy night in Hull and that kind of thing. It does eventually tell when you've got enough talent. You can get those youngsters from overseas as well. I mean, the Cesc Fabregas story was the first of them. And you can bring them in and look after them and you end up with the kind of teams that we saw this week coming out of England.
Definitely. We have a tongue-in-cheek ongoing battle about Spanish football and English football on Twitter. Your thoughts, though, because at this stage of the contest, it's not often that we see four English teams, or even more if you go a round or two below, this many English teams still in it. One has to ask what's changed, and you've talked about the professionalism and the money and the attention to detail. And certainly maybe those stands have improved. Do you in any way think that what Pep has done with Man City in terms of pulling them up to a standard that he thought was better has made the other teams look at themselves and try get to that standard? You look at a Liverpool this season with a record amount of points looking who look like they might finish second, but certainly that second is enough to dominate the rest of the tournament with the passion and attention to detail that you talk about.
But that's a layered conversation, isn't it? Because I could say to you that, you know, like Peter Mosimani at Mamelodi Sundowns and Johan Neeskens before him, give them all the money in the world and Neeskens could do nothing.
Right.
Bring Pizzo in, a man of great detail, a man of great passion and work and a work ethic that you won't believe Pizzo has got.
Sure.
To get all his players out on Sunday morning, I thought, after they'd drawn 0-0 and gone out of the Champions League, he had them out training on Sunday morning. I mean, that's unbelievable.
Sure.
So you need a Pep Guardiola, right? Pep comes in with all his experience, does all the things he wants to. And at Man City, he's not going to have anyone saying to him, no, you can't spend that. You can't do that. You can't buy him. You can't sell him. He gets complete control. And so then turns Man City into the machine that they've become. Bearing in mind, when I was a kid, I think 67 Man City won the league. And then after that, even with Mike Somerville and Franny Lee and all them, they didn't do much. You know, Man United were always the bigger club. So, fired by that inferiority complex in Manchester, Man City have created this machine. And yes, so then everyone else has to try and play catch up because they've got Sheikh Mansour's money, they've got millions, they've got players, they've got two full teams that they could put out and would beat most teams in the Premier League. So yes, then everyone else has to play catch up. And I agree that Jurgen Klopp was a response to Pep Guardiola. We're not going to save any money here. We're going to spend full on Jurgen Klopp, who is a great talker, a great motivator. The women love him. Everyone loves him. And he has created a charismatic leadership, much like Pep Guardiola's, in my view, like Jose Mourinho used to be when he was a little bit less big-headed and more of a modest but very charismatic leader at Chelsea in his first spell. So, yes, everyone else is catching up. But look at Pochettino, for instance. He's had a terrible second half of the season with Spurs, to be honest. They've fallen 20 points behind the leaders, and we really thought they'd stay up there. He hasn't been allowed to buy players to transfer windows, but they stuck with Pochettino. I've got the feeling in Spain, Italy, and maybe South Africa, if a player's having a bad run like that and they don't trust him to spend money, he goes. Sure. And Pochettino is stuck with them. And I've never seen in my life the reaction of a coach like Pochettino's to their last gasp win against Ajax. He was crying his eyes out. And when they interviewed him afterwards, he was fine. And then he suddenly said, I win for my family as well. And then he burst into tears again. So there's a level of, yes, we're all playing catch up with Man City because of their fabulous money and all the things they've done since they got the Commonwealth Games Stadium. And they've become this big club, bigger than Man United. But there's also definitely a feeling of passion in English football. They play more games than we do. They play on a wet Tuesday night, and there'll still be 30,000 people there, and there'll be people crying if they lose. And if you look at that level of passion that's required to be a Premier League player, whether you're Brazilian, Italian, or English, Scottish for that matter, you feel like you have to give everything for 90 minutes. And you try and put your finger on what's changed this season. Right? Spain have absolutely dominated for years, and you had Chelsea and Man United and try to chip away at the Spanish dominance and unable to do so. What changed this year? Yeah, I would say probably Pep Guardiola, you know, and Man City not making it again. That game with Spurs was just unbelievable, wasn't it? I thought Barr got it wrong
at
the end. But because they were motivated to get beyond mentally, because we had four sides through, six sides in Europe in both competitions through, obviously there's more chance that English clubs are going to do well. And also that the competition between top English clubs. Can you imagine, Clint, just put yourself in this position. You've got Pirates and Sundowns in the semi-finals of the Champions League, and you've got Wits and Kaiser Chiefs in the semi-finals of the Confederation Cup.
I don't think it's ever going to happen
Cup.
In our time, to be honest with you, Colly.
There was a little time when I thought Pirates might get through and we could see a Sundowns Pirates kind of semi or quarter. But you have to imagine, for a lifelong English football fan, and there's millions of them, right? Every week the stadiums are, if not full, then nearly full. And funny enough, Man City is one of the ones that isn't always full. But you've lived your life supporting a football team. And I said to someone today on Twitter, I think you were connected to that conversation, even the little villages where I lived outside London, a half an hour outside London, each village has its own little stadium and its own team, and they're playing in the Vauxhall Opal third division. And if they get promoted, then they're only 5 years away from Division Four, and they're paying a bit of money. And then they've got a junior section, and then they've got the regular 400-500 fans that come every Saturday, even if it's snowing. So the only thing I can think of that would explain to someone that doesn't understand football is, there is a level of passion that runs through English football that for years has been underfunded and underutilised and held in check by the old fart, we used to call them, at the Football Association. So no one really felt they could reach out to a Belgian coach for their under-16s or let's try that new Dutch method of total football at the age of 10. You're not allowed to play 11-a-side. And gradually that's all percolated through and you've got young, dynamic people in charge of small football clubs. And eventually, I think that quality will tell. Obviously, it's not all English players. It's not all English coaches. But I think you'll find that all the teams that got deep into Europe this year had a lot of foreigners in their team. But when those foreigners come in, they find themselves in a very professional setup. They're hugged by the team. Wenger used to be good at this, getting a player into the club and hugging him. So he actually used to prefer taking young foreigners because he could have their family and he could have their social group within the club. Instead of someone like Jermaine Pennant, the young Arsenal player, or David Bentley, who came with all his kind of hangers-on, and he'd go to the pub, down at Kensal Green, and they'd get pissed on a Thursday night. So all these things, I suppose, have come together this season. I can say that the Premier League is the best league in the world this season. Before this, I thought the Bundesliga for a while, those top three or four in the Liga, that was great. But can England having set this incredible standard, and with their national team doing quite well in the new the Nations League, the European Nations League, and doing well in the World Cup, and doing well in European qualifiers immediately, can England take this and turn it into a dynasty like Spain did, like Germany have, like Italy did? I don't know. Especially with Brexit going on, funny enough, there's going to be a few shakeups with the way we sign players. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see if England can hang on to this position of superiority. I mean, you could see from Gary Lineker's tweets last night, the Mirror guys, Dean Lewis, and then they're going, what is this? They can't believe, no one can believe that England is successful, because it isn't easy to get global success in football. It's a global game. And unlike rugby and cricket, which South Africans often talk about, being in the top five, top one, football is 250 nations, and every single nation would give their left bollock to be number one in the world, or number one in the continent, or number one in the Southern African region. So football is a huge balancing act. We've seen Germany come and go, haven't we? And maybe coming back again now. We've seen the Dutch. I would love Ajax to have gone through. Ajax had a fantastic team. I've got no problem with Spurs winning there, but In the two legs of the semi-final, they ran out of steam in the second half, both legs. They're young. They don't quite have the legs to get through 90 minutes yet. And I'm sure most of them will be sold, unfortunately, in the near future. But you can see Dutch football coming back. Do you remember when we were kids? The Dutch.
Incredible.
Tim Schubier and Johan Cruyff, Johan Neeskens, who came here. They were players that you changed your game for. You were a left back like I was in Pretoria with Roy Hodgson as my coach, and I'm starting to look at Wim Schubier on the old videos we used to get and run down the wing and try and cross my left foot. Bloody useless. But you were inspired by Dutch football. For a long time, the last 10 years, Dutch football hasn't done that much at club and international level. Now they're back to where they were because they've stuck to their coaching policies. I imagine they've created academies that are world famous, Ajax being particularly good with African players and South African players. So it's lovely to see Ajax do that. But for me as a dyed-in-the-wool Brit who has gone to games on a wet Tuesday in Brighton or places you wouldn't believe, mate, council estates where you think you're not going to get out alive, it makes Soweto look friendly. I've been to all those places and I just feel like this is finally you can actually say, well, it was worth it. 100%. You look at what you've seen and you actually think, bloody hell, this week, from Kompany's goal for Man City, I know that isn't really part of this, but every day this week, there was a reason to watch football and think, yes, and to be thrilled by it. And really, isn't that why you and me are in this game?
100%. And I think you summed it up best when you said right now, maybe not last season, and who knows what's going to happen ahead, but right now English football is perfect, and I couldn't agree more. It is perfect, and the millions of kids who support it here in South Africa and around the world are no doubt going to have their Liverpool, Spurs, Arsenal and Chelsea kits on at training this evening and running around parks. And that's what it's all about at the end of the day. Collie, we have come to the end of the show here. Thank you so much for your time. I know you're a busy man, and we'd love to have you back to talk English football going forward. Thanks, and I will catch you on Twitter for the two finals.
Could never take offence, okay? There were times when most South African Twitterati were saying, oh, we don't want Premier League football, it's rubbish, it's kick and rush. So again, that is something that this week, you wanted to kind of assert the fact that, hold on, no, it's finally come to fruition.
Correct.
Will there be another week like this? I don't know, but yeah, any time, mate.
Basking it for now. Thanks for taking the call, and we'll speak to you again. Cheers, Cole. Bye.
Cheers, mate. Bye.
All right, that's a conversation with their Clint Roper and chatting there with O'Neill Collins about the UEFA Champions League. Thank you so much there to O'Neill Collins. Thank you so much to David Capel. Thank you so much also to Clint Roper. Thank you ever so much to all of you, our loyal listeners.
Sokala Duma Radio.